May discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting marketing or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA and a certified financial planner and an accredited estate planner as well. More information at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen each and every week online at wdiy.org, and there are prior shows on there as well, so you can go to the website and check out and hear what we are about. It's a nice feature to have there. Welcome to the show. Today is February 6th, 2013. The markets were mixed today. The Dow closing up at 13,986, the NASDAQ down at 3,168, and the S&P closed up at 1,512. I'm happy to have you all here. Last week, I discussed tax tips from the Pennsylvania Institute of Certified Public Accountants and working with a CPA. And we had as our guest Sherry Free, who was a CPA from Hutchinson, Gillihan, and Free in Quakertown. And she did a great job, and I really want to thank her for being here and doing that. It was a lot of fun to have another CPA in the studio, which I have this evening as well, and we'll introduce him in just a moment. Tonight, we are going to be discussing the ups and downs of bond investing with my guest, and we are live. Andrea is with us, and she will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while we do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. We'll do our best to answer them. The number to call this evening is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. And I want to remind the listeners, you can either call in and ask your question live, which we love. It's a lot of fun for us. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can always give your question to Andrea and she will bring it into the studio. So I would like at this time to welcome my guest this evening. His name is Thomas M. Riddle. He is a CPA and a CFP, and he is president of Valley National Financial Advisors. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Hi, Laurie. It's great to be back.
Tom's been on the show many, many times, I would say. So, Tom, what do you want to share tonight? Anything new and interesting?
Well, I think to put all this in perspective, I've been in the financial industry for a long time, long enough to see three cycles in real estate and one full cycle in interest rates. And we're going to be talking about what happens when interest rates go the opposite direction of what they have been doing for the last 32 years. So there's some remarkable changes that occur whenever rates change and start going up instead of going down.
Okay. So hopefully regular listeners know what we try to do each week is bring a topic of interest that relates to your financial choices that you have each and every week. And financial choices come in a variety of flavors. It's not just about, you know, how you're investing. It's about, you know, taxes, your budgeting, your work, your jobs, your retirement accounts. There are so many different facets to your financial life. And we thought, since there's so much, you know, talk lately, whenever you turn on the television and the news, there's a lot of talk about interest rates. And so many people, I think, Tom, sometimes, you know, will act like they understand because sometimes it's too difficult to say you don't understand. So I'm hoping tonight we can kind of get some clarity, a little definitions around bonds so that we all leave knowing a little bit more than when we started the show tonight. If you have questions this evening, whether it's about bonds or taxes, you're welcome to give us a call. The number is 610-758-8810. And tonight we are discussing the ups and downs of bond investing. And because people are talking about it more, Tom, let's start to with maybe giving our listeners a little bit better understanding of what we should be aware in our investing. And a lot of times people don't realize they have bonds, possibly even in their 401ks. So I want to throw tax tips in throughout the show as well. But let's start with a first question, which is, what is a bond as opposed to an equity?
Well, there are some very big differences between bonds and equities. You know, bonds are basically an IOU to pay both a stated amount of principal in the future and a stated amount of interest rate between now and the date that the bond matures. So to put this in real life terms, if an investor were to buy a bond, the bond would have a stated maturity date, which could be anywhere from a day to as much as 30 or 40 years into the future. The bond will have a interest rate that is going to be paid to you as the bond holder, which is the owner of the bond, sometimes called a bond holder. And that interest rate is going to stay fixed. So whatever the rate is that's being promised on the bond document is the interest rate that you're going to receive as the bond owner for the length of the time that you own the bond. The bonds can be traded like stocks, but it's important to understand that what happens is the interest rate that you receive as a bond holder stays fixed. And over the holding period of the bond price or the market price fluctuates based upon what other similar types of bonds would pay in the marketplace. Now, that's something we'll come back to because it's kind of complicated. Now, bond investors hold, if you hold the bond until maturity, you're pretty much locked into the rate of return that you're going to receive because at maturity, you're going to receive what's called the par value of the bond, which hopefully is close to what you paid for it, but not always. But the key is that you'll be receiving an interest rate that's very predictable. And as long as you own the bond, you'll be receiving the interest. And at the time the bond matures, you'll receive the par value. Now, that differs significantly from a stock, which we sometimes in the financial industry call equities. An equity or a stock pays dividends. Some do, some don't. But many stocks these days pay dividends. The difference between a dividend and interest on a bond is that the dividend that you receive on a stock is not guaranteed. It's a type of payment that can fluctuate. It can go down. It can be eliminated or omitted. That's a technical term for it. It can be omitted. Dividends can also be increased, and there could be special dividends, like there were quite a few special dividends at the end of last year. So the dividends that you receive on stocks don't have the same fixed character as the interest that you receive on a bond. And secondly, the stock has no maturity date, whereas with a bond, there's a stated maturity date. With stocks, there is no maturity date. They're perpetual, unless the company goes out of existence or unless the company is acquired by another company or a number of other situations that could arise. But basically, the stocks are no stated maturity date. So there's a very, very significant difference in both the principal and the interest versus dividends.
Okay. And then a little bit further differentiation, and I'm because I want to take us to the break before I go into our next section. Bonds, as you described them very well, fixed income, stated interest rate, something they know they can plan on. And quite often when we hear people talk about investing in general and portfolios, you'll hear people say, what's your stock or bond portfolio? What is your equity or bond portfolio? What's your ratio? And you'll hear people say, oh, 60-40. And sometimes this is what they're referring to, the equity piece and the bond piece. And then we also hear people talk about fixed income in general. So when people are talking about fixed income, again, we're typically talking about bonds because there's a stated rate of interest that we know we can count on. And it's important to understand the difference between those two when you're doing financial planning and you're trying to possibly, for example, someone in their retirement, when they're trying to set up a replacement cash flow for their paycheck, they may need to know these kinds of terms for planning. What kind of fixed income can they count on? What kind of, fluctuating income? All right. And then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the tax differences between a dividend and interest. And then I want to talk to Tom about the different kinds of bonds, because now we kind of have a definition of what a bond is and equity. And then we're going to talk about the different kinds of bonds. So we're going to build up on this as we go through the show. And we're just going to be so well informed by the end. If you have questions, we love phone calls, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have vinyl albums or 45s on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the records, and you will receive a tax deduction. Any condition is accepted. For more information or to arrange for drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 extension 3 or visit WDIY.org.
And welcome back to the show. We are discussing the ups and downs of bond investing this evening, and we're getting a really great primer on bonds and all that entails, and get more details as we go through the show. If you have questions this evening, give us a call, 610-758-8810. And I have in the studio with me this evening Tom Riddle. He is a CPA and a certified financial planner and advisor and president of Valley National Financial Advisors. And he's helping me out with my little lesson here this evening talking about bonds. And we just went over the difference between a bond and equity. Bond is a fixed income instrument. Typically, we know what interest rate we're getting. And just real quick, when we're talking about taxes, because I'm going to kind of pepper some tax facts throughout the show this evening, when we talk about fixed income and interest, we're talking about ordinary income. And a little later, after Tom describes the different kinds of bonds, we're going to talk about the different taxation that bonds can have. And that is to be differentiated from the taxation we have on equities and an equity that's paying a dividend. And many dividends today qualify for a lower tax rate, which is a capital gains tax rate. That's important to know when you're looking at your investment portfolio to understand what kind of income tax consequence you're going to have based on the investment decisions you're making with your advisor. So, Tom, we talked about a bond being, in my mind, I see it as a loan. You're saying, you know, maybe you're investing in a bond. In my mind, I'm paying $100,000 for this instrument. That money is actually being used by somebody. And for that, they're agreeing to pay me some stated amount of interest over some period of time, much almost like a mortgage when we have a home loan. But I'm giving them this money. They're promising to pay me back. So who am I making these loans to? Who am I giving my money to, investing, that they're paying to use my money? What are the different kinds of bonds that we have?
Well, bonds are categorized several different ways. One way bonds are categorized is the way you're pointing at right now, which is, well, who issued the bond? In other words, who owes you money whenever the bond matures, and who owes you the interest whenever you collect it every 3 months or 6 months? And that depends upon the issuer, and the issuer can be either the federal government or one of the government agencies. That those are typically the bonds issued by the United States government are typically called treasury bonds or treasury notes or treasury bills. And bonds are longer term, notes are intermediate term, and bills are very short term in maturity. The next category of bonds are bonds issued by municipalities, either states or local governments, and they're typically referred to by investors as muni bonds. Their interest rate can be tax-free. And that word can be, or two words, it can be, is dependent upon whether the bond was issued under some special privileges granted to the state or whether the bonds were issued outside of that as taxable issues of municipal bonds. So you really have to ask and investigate whether the bond is a taxable bond or a tax-free bond when we're talking about municipal bonds these days. The third category of issuer are corporations, and corporations can be high quality corporations, you know, the well-heeled, healthy companies, or bonds can be issued by lesser quality companies, and those would be low credit quality and sometimes referred to as high yield bonds, and some people call them junk bonds. Those are corporations who are not well-heeled and not very healthy from a financial standpoint. Another classification, by the way, for bonds is by credit quality. And sometimes we refer to them as high-quality bonds or investment-grade bonds. Investment-grade bonds are those bonds issued by companies that have had a outside credit rating agency rate the quality of the bonds, credit quality. And the leading company who does this right now is Under Fire. It's called Standard & Poor. And people usually refer to it as S&P. So the S&P rating goes from AAA, AA, A, BBB, and keeps on going down. But those top four credit quality or credit ratings are the ones that are referred to typically as investment-grade bonds. And typically they are bonds that big institutions or pension funds can buy and be considered high-quality bonds.
Okay, so when we look at these different kinds of bonds, and I'm going to throw in some tax tips now, we also need to understand that the taxation on the interest that we're getting on these different kinds of bonds might be different. And so Tom had mentioned, you know, you have to make sure you understand what kind of bonds you're looking at, what kind of ratings, that type of thing. You also want to understand the interest rate you're getting, but also the after-tax rate that you're going to get on them, so that if you see a bond that might give you 6%, and maybe it's one of these junk bonds, and you think, well, that's great, I can get 6%, and on this municipal bond, I'm only going to get 4, so I'm going to go with the 6%. You have to weigh the different instruments that are being offered or that you're considering. And in part of that analysis, you also want to look at the after-tax consequence because Tom mentioned several categories of bonds here. So let's start with, first of all, you remember I mentioned that interest on bonds is ordinary income. And when I mean ordinary income, there's no special tax rate on ordinary income. It's just taxed at your regular income tax rates depending on what bracket you are on, what bracket you're in. So fixed income may be subject to ordinary income tax rates, but we have to drill down a little bit deeper. We have to say, but what kind of bond income might have some special rates? So let's start with what would be subject to income tax rates across the board. In my example, I said 6%, kind of maybe a junk bond. That bond, it's a corporation, it doesn't have a good rating. That would be subject to federal income tax and state income tax. It's regular ordinary income, subject to taxes both federally and state. When we look at government bonds, U.S. government bonds, as Tom had mentioned, there's direct U.S. obligations, and then there's some, you know, other U.S. agencies that may qualify that will be subject to federal income tax, but is not subject to state income tax. So almost when you're looking at an after-tax rate of return, you want to look at not only the federal rate, but also the state rate, Tom, right? I mean, you could kind of maybe even add it
That's
together.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the U.S. government bonds would be subject to federal, but not state. And then there's all kinds of different little pieces of that U.S. government, so you have to make sure you understand that. And then municipal bonds, we automatically think when we hear munis, as Tom had said, that they're tax exempt. But Tom, you cautioned people, there may be muni bonds out there that are not tax exempt. For state purposes.
That's and for federal purposes, too.
And for federal purposes, too. And some of these muni bonds may be subject to alternative minimum tax. So you really kind of got to read the fine print. And maybe Tom will be able to describe some of what that means a little bit later as we go through the show. But let's pretend we have a pure muni bond that, you know, in all the little language, it says that it does qualify for tax-free for the state. You also have to make sure it's a state you live in, because typically if you buy a Pennsylvania bond and you live in Pennsylvania, it will be tax-free for Pennsylvania. But if you live in Pennsylvania but buy a Virginia bond, that Virginia bond is going to be subject to tax in Pennsylvania. So real quick, corporate bonds subject to federal and state tax. Government bonds, typically, generally, I'm saying subject to federal income tax but not state income tax. Muni bonds, the ones that do qualify for tax-exempt status, read the fine print, would be U.S. tax-free and your state of residency tax-free. Okay? So lots of good information there. When we come back from our break, we're going to talk about all these kind of higher interest rates and what does that mean when people are all, you know, afraid of higher interest rates. If you have questions, this is for me, like, really cool. I love this topic. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. I have in the studio with me this evening Tom Riddle, a CPA, CFP, financial advisor, and president of Valley National Financial Advisors. And we're getting the lowdown on the ups and downs of bond investing and trying to lay out the land, the description, the explanation, what's a bond, what's an equity, what different kinds of bonds we have, some of the tax implications as we go through here. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. If your question's not about bonds tonight and you have a tax question, you're welcome to still call in. Tom and I are both CPAs. It's what we do, so you're welcome to call in, although I don't have my quick finder, so I'd have to see if I could pull some of this stuff out of my head. But the phone number is 610-758-8810. Right before the breakdown, we were talking about the making sure that when you're considering investing in bonds, understand the different types of bonds, and also understand the after-tax rate of return. Now we're going to kind of turn the subject a little bit more, and this is where I think it gets a little bit more complicated. People should have paper and pencil, where we're going to talk about the nuances of these bonds and the effect of interest rates. So we hear in the media all the time, higher interest rates are dangerous to bond investors. Woo, 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 everyone. You know, and I don't like fear. I like people to be educated so they don't have to be afraid. But what interest rates are we talking about when they say, oh, interest rates are going up? Let's give people some perspective of what they have to pay attention to.
Okay, well, that's a great lead-in. And I think it's a common misconception among non-professional investors that bonds and bond mutual funds are predictable and risk-free. They're not. Investors need to be aware of two main risks with bonds and bond funds. And the two risks are credit risk. That's where the issuing corporation or issuing municipality defaults and goes into bankruptcy, and you don't get paid your principal or part of your interest. And the second risk with bond investing is interest rate risk. Now, that word or phrase, interest rate risk, well, what do we mean by interest rates? I mean, whose interest rates are we talking about?
Because you told me it was fixed at the beginning of the show.
Right. That's right. I did say that. I think it's important as a basic understanding of the way the bond market works is that in the United States, all bonds are tied or pegged to the interest rate on U.S. Treasury bills, notes, and bonds. collectively called treasury yields. So all interest rates, whether it's bank deposits, savings accounts, CDs, municipal bonds, corporate bonds, are related and move the same direction as the interest rate on treasuries, the treasury yields. So that means if treasury yields trend down, that means that all other interest rates will trend down. And we all know what bank accounts are paying these days and CDs. It's very miserably low. Well, the interest rate has been trending down for the last 32 years. Since 1981, interest rates have been trending down here on treasuries gradually. It's not been a steady, solid down movement, but it's been gradually moving down and moving down for the last 32 years from a very, very high level of interest rates in 1981 to today, interest rate that's much, much lower. And the danger is what happens when interest rates start going back up again.
Okay, so how does that affect bonds if interest rates
go up
instead
of down? Well, now I'm not sitting here predicting that this is going to happen overnight. And we all know that things can change over time. In fact, that's one of the basic principles here in the universe is that things change. Well,
I don't like change, Tom. Tom knows I don't like change.
Everybody would like to sit back and clip their interest rates on their bonds and be happy. But here, probably the best way to explain the danger is, let's say, for example, we'll go through the mathematics of buying a 10-year U.S. government bond. Let's say, for example, you decided that you wanted to buy a 10-year U.S. government bond. That means it's a government bond issued by the United States government treasury, and it's going to mature in 10 years from now in the year 2023. And the United States government promises to pay you at that time the full amount that you purchased it for today. Let's say you invested $100,000 in that bond. So if you hold that $100,000 United States government bond for 10 years, the United States government promises to pay you at the end of 10 years $100,000. In the meantime, they also promise to pay you about 2% interest. Now, to be exact, if you would have purchased that bond today, the promise is to pay you 1.96% per year, every year, until it matures in 10 years. That's fixed, and that's what the United States government's guaranteeing you. But let's say, for example, let's go forward into the future and say now we're in the year 2015. And by the year 2015, the Federal Reserve Bank stops buying government bonds as part of its quantitative easing program, and the United States government must issue new bonds to fund the deficit, which is still going on at that time, 2015. But the Federal Reserve Bank is not there anymore to buy the bonds that they've been buying now for the last couple of years. So now interest rates suddenly spike up from 2% to 5%. That means that in 2015, in February of 2015, if you were to go to the Treasury Department and say, I want to buy a bond, your yield would be, your interest rate would be 5%.
So the bond that I bought in 2013 at 2%, which looked pretty good compared to the no interest at the bank, all of a sudden in 2015, I'm going, oh, shoot, I could have had 5% instead of 2%.
Yes, but you're holding that bond and your interest rate is still going to be at 2%.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that waited until 2015 to buy the bond in 2015 are getting 5%.
Mm-hmm.
So you say, well, gee, I don't like this bond I own anymore. I hear I can sell these on the open market. I'm going to get rid of my 2% bond.
Mm-hmm.
And you call somebody like a broker and you say, I want to sell my United States government bond. How much can I sell it for? The bond broker will say, it's worth not $100,000. It's only worth $85,000.
What?
Well, yeah, what? I mean, I paid $100,000 for it. Why? Why is that? Well, because if you were to go and buy a brand new bond at that time, it would be $100,000, but you'd be receiving 5% interest. And so your bond is not worth as much in the marketplace. That means your bond has gone down in value because you bought it in 2013, earning only 2% on it.
Right. So to make it marketable, because I can't give them the 5% rate that they could go out on the open market and get, to make it marketable, I have to sell it a little cheaper. And in essence, it's almost like you're giving that person who's going to buy it at a discount, it's kind of putting them on a more even footing a little bit. So at the top of the show, remember we said bonds, typically it's, you know, you buy something for $100,000 and it's a promise to pay something back in 10 years if it's a 10-year maturity, and you get your $100,000 back and it's a fixed income. So just because you've made that promise with the person that you've bought it from, the U.S. government or a corporation, doesn't mean you have to hold it to maturity. We can sell it on the open market, as Tom had said. We're going to talk a little bit more about the details of this when we come back from our break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. The phone number this evening, folks, is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'd love some phone calls. We've actually, the last couple of weeks, we've been getting lots of phone calls during the hour, so I don't know what makes this all so special tonight. But we do have a lot of great information we're giving out, and I think it's fascinating to me, even though I understand this, I enjoy getting the additional information, having it reiterated, kind of giving you a good perspective and helping you understand what people are talking about in bonds. And, you know, you might say to yourself, well, I don't have bonds, I don't invest in bonds. But you would be surprised if you have a retirement account somewhere, probably in your retirement plan. There may be some bond investments in there that you don't realize. You might have mutual funds that you don't realize might have some bonds. You know, I imagine there probably even are pension plans that might invest in bonds, Tom.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, so it doesn't hurt to kind of expand your repertoire of financial understanding as far as this goes. Sometimes we like to say, oh, I don't want to pay attention. I don't want to know. But, you know, knowing enough to raise flags for you so that you can have these conversations with your advisor, I think is really, really important. So we hope that you're getting something out of this tonight. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. So, Tom, we were just talking about bonds, that people actually don't have to hold them to maturity. And we talked about how higher interest rates can affect bonds, which is why people may need to pay attention to that right now. Because if we've seen over the past 32 years, bond price or interest rates continuing to decrease over time, and the next thought might be, well, if they've come down for so long, at some point they're going to start going up. And again, we can't always predict that. But if they start going up, that's when people have to say, well, wait, the bonds I might be holding might not have a competitive interest rate anymore. So what am I going to do? You don't have to hold the bond to maturity. You can sell it, but you might lose some of that principal that you put into it. But the other side of that then, Tom, is if I can sell my bond, my $100,000 bond for $85,000, on paper, I might have lost some of that. But what am I going to do with that $85,000 now? I might be able to recover some of it in another way, because I'm going to go buy a bond with a higher interest rate maybe.
Well, there's lots of ways to play this. But I think the big thing right now, Lori, is to understand what the dangers are and get ready in your portfolio for the dangers and understand what to look for in the marketplace so you can react. Because I'm not recommending that investors run out tomorrow to sell their entire bond portfolio. What I am recommending that investors do is get ready and understand where the dangers are in their portfolio. And I'm going to give them some statistics later in the discussion about that.
Okay, so let me just kind of recap a little bit. Now, we've talked about the difference of having bonds in your portfolio and equities being like stocks, dividend-paying stocks, bonds being fixed income. And different kinds of bonds that you can have: corporate bonds, government bonds, municipal bonds, junk bonds, high yield bonds. So then there's also tax considerations to keep in mind when you're looking at the after-tax rate of return on the different kinds of bonds that you can get. And then also being aware of the bonds that you are currently holding and the effect of rising interest rates, if we end up in that environment, how that would affect the bonds that you currently hold, and being aware and kind of watching and making sure that you can have that conversation with your advisor. Tom, we did have a call come in from Art in Collegeville. It's off air. And he asked, can you talk about the auction process and how that affects interest rates? And Tom, before you answer this question, first let's talk about what Art obviously knows a little bit about bonds already, because he knows about something called the auction process. So let's first talk about what the auction, what auction is Art talking about, and then how that process affects interest rates.
Art, I have to thank you. I don't think there was a better question you could have asked to fit right into the program where we're going with this whole discussion than to ask, you know, about the auction process and how that affects interest rates. Because the auction that happens is frequently, it's the auction's fairly frequent. It's weekly, monthly, semi-annual for the different types of bonds that the United States government issues. And whenever we say the auction, that implies that we're talking about United States government bonds. And remember, all interest rates are tied to United States government bonds and notes and bills. So the auction process sets the tone for interest rates, all interest rates, whether it's savings accounts at the bank, or your loan at the bank, or your mortgage. It's all tied or related to the Treasury yields. And the auction process that Art referred to is the process where the United States government issues more debt to the public or to investors, and it's an auction process. Now, the fact is, bonds right now are being artificially priced. It's because through an open market mechanism, the Federal Reserve Bank is buying upwards of 80% of all the new bonds being issued by the United States government. So we have the Federal Reserve Bank buying a big supply of bonds coming onto the market.
And from the U.S. government.
Right, from the U.S. government. Sounds like that's a circular,
right, right.
Sounds like it's just a shell game with a walnut shell, and that's what some people refer to it as. I'm not going to make a comment on that, but I am going to make a comment that bond prices are artificially priced, and those artificial prices are very, very high. That means yields are very low right now. Prices are very high. And it's not only the United States government who's doing this. The European Central Bank has joined the party. And just recently, last month, the Japan Central Bank has decided to do the same. They've joined the party also in a big way. So we've got a number of central banks now around the world. Don't want to forget about the Brits either. They're participating. There are a number of banks around the world that are doing the same thing. They're trying to control interest rates, and they're trying to keep interest rates very low for several reasons. But the main point to make is that it's unsustainable. They cannot continue to do this forever. At some point, the Federal Reserve Bank, the European Central Bank, the Bank of Japan are all going to have to stop buying as many bonds as they're buying right now in the open market. So the question is, what happens then? Well, we don't know for sure what's going to happen then, because this has never happened before, at least not to this extent. You know, the Fed's been buying these 80% of the bonds to help service the deficit and keep the interest rates low. That means Treasury yield is mispriced. And that means that all other fixed income, corporation bonds, municipal bonds, are all mispriced. And when markets get flooded with too much money, this misallocation occurs and the problems begin. At some point, the buildup that we're seeing is going to be a problem, and the public doesn't realize that when yields come down, prices go up, at some point the opposite is going to occur, and yields are going to go up and prices are going to come down. And we're worried as to when that's going to occur, and I cannot answer that. I can only answer the fact that investors and the public needs to be informed as to what happens when yields do go up and prices do go down on bonds.
So yield goes up, yield meaning the interest rate that they're paying, and the price goes down, meaning, you know, how much you're going to be able to pay it or sell it.
Well, keep in mind the interest rate on the bond that you own, as we talked about earlier with the 2% bond, that stays fixed. But what happens is that the yield on bonds go higher because prices go lower to make yields higher. So if prices go lower, if you're receiving the same fixed amount of income on it, your yield goes up because the prices go down. But the key thing here is that if you're holding bonds and interest rates go up, the value of the bonds you already own will go down.
Mm-hmm. Let's highlight a little bit of a tax implication here, just I think if we can visualize it a little bit. If I buy a bond for $100,000 in year one and I hold it to maturity till year 10, what you've told me, if everything stays, I guess the word copacetic, where the company's fine, the government's fine, and I've invested $100,000, they've promised to pay me back $100,000, I have a zero gain or loss after 10 years. I've held it to maturity, they pay me my full amount. I have on Schedule D, I report a sale of a $10,000, did I use a $10,000 or $100,000, whatever, $100,000?
$100,000
bond, and my cost basis was $100,000, zero gain or loss. And over that 10-year period, I reported my 2% interest that I got every year as interest income, my government bond, taxable for federal, tax exempt for Pennsylvania. But in the other example, in 2015, I realized interest rates have gone up. I want to get in on that action. I don't like my 2% bond anymore. I'm thinking I want to dump it. I go to sell it on the open market. No one's going to pay me $100,000 for it. They pay me $85,000. On Schedule D, I'm going to have a loss of $15,000 because I invested $100,000 and I'm only getting $85,000. Now, if I'm the person who's buying the $85,000 bond, then there's a little bit of a complication because in some respect, they deem that at the end of that term, if I've bought the $85,000 bond, folks, at the end of maturity, remember, this is the bond that's going to pay $100,000. I'm going to get $100,000 at maturity. In my case, I bought it in the other person bought it in 2013. I'm buying it 2015. It's going to mature in 2023, and I'm going to get $100,000. Well, guess what? A little bit of that discount that I bought it at is actually an element of interest. And that's kind of where we talk about yield. It's not really yielding me the 2%, which I'm getting on a 1099, and I'm reporting 2% of income. But some of that discount is actually a bit of a yield, too. And I could be in a position where I'm reporting some of that as interest income, and it's called accretion, and it's very, very complicated. I'm glad
you're describing this, Lori.
So you've got to keep in mind when we're talking about yields, the fixed rate on that bond is 2%, but in reality, I might be getting a little bit back in this discount, a little bit back of my interest. So a little complicated, but lots of things going on with bonds. Tom, we talked about bonds, government bonds, corporate bonds, and people can purchase, you know, bonds in auction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right now, the Federal Reserve is the only ones buying a lot of them, but other institutions can go out in the auction process and buy bonds. And I want to thank Art again for that phone call talking about the auction process. So we appreciate you listening. But people can also, if they're not in a position where they want to really pay attention to the specific details of each of the bonds, whether it's subject to AMT, whether it's a muni, you know, tax-free, what kind of government bond it is, what kind of corporate bond, is it low credit, high yield, junk bonds, whatever.
Credit quality. Yeah.
Credit quality. Thank you. Maybe there's an alternative for them, and we can talk about that when we come back from the next break, what kind of alternatives do people have if they don't want to go out and buy one bond themselves and don't want to have to pay attention to all the details of those? So when we come back, we're going to talk more about that. The phone number this evening, there's still plenty of time to call in. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back, and this is your host, Lori Siebert, and I have in the studio with me this evening Tom Riddle, CPA, CFP, Financial Advisor, and President of Valley National Financial Advisors. And we're talking about the ups and downs of bond investing. If you have questions, you can call in. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We've been talking about the different kinds of bonds, buying individual bonds. But I had just asked Tom, what if someone, it's just too overwhelming for them to think about all the implications of each of these different kinds of bonds and going out and picking just the perfect bond. What options do people have, Tom?
Many more investors invest in bond mutual funds than they do in individual bonds. In fact, I think it's a pretty heavily weighted toward those who invest in bond mutual funds, overwhelming those who invest in individual bonds because of the intricacies of picking out a bond and understanding all these issues that we're talking about. And you can turn over that responsibility to a bond fund manager. But you know, there's another level of complexity which involves buying bonds through a bond mutual fund. And if somebody owns an individual bond with a rising yield and a falling price, they can simply hold that individual bond until it matures. In the case we were talking about before, if they bought the bond in 2013 and with a 10-year maturity, they could hold it until 2023 and be guaranteed to get their full principal back. But in 2015, they're going to be sitting there saying, gee, I'm only earning 2% on my bond, and my neighbors and friends and coworkers are earning 5% on their bond. I'd like to be them instead of me, but you know, you could always just hold it and hold it until it matures, that individual bond. But if you're inside a bond mutual fund, you don't have that luxury, because inside a bond mutual fund, if someone sells when the price is down, if someone sells their mutual fund, their bond mutual fund, when the bond prices are down, the capital loss is locked in for the remainder of the mutual fund shareholders. And that's a dynamic that we see in rising interest rate periods. And I've seen it happen, unfortunately, several times in the past where interest rates fall, interest rates rise, bond fund prices go down too, just like bond prices do. And that's one of the intricacies you have to understand with a bond mutual fund. They are not as predictable and they have more risk than what the general public beliefs.
Right, because people have it in their head, fixed income, and they think they know that this is what they're going to get, and they don't realize the market fluctuations, the interest rate impact on not just bonds, but mutual funds as well. So that's great. I think that's really important to get that message across. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Tom, what do you see in the future?
Well, some experts suspect that bond yields, interest rates, have gone down so far and bond prices have gone up so high as to form a bubble. That's what some experts believe. Now, bubbles burst when it becomes evident to people that they are not making money any longer and something's wrong. And that's a sentimental thing. So it's psychological. Now, for example, one can point to anything that occurred in March of 2000 to pop that dot-com bubble we had in 2000, but it was a psychological effect. It just happened overnight. You know, one day we didn't know what year was going to happen, but we knew stock prices in the dot-com area were too high. And it changed overnight. The psychological change was dramatic. The same thing can happen to bonds, and it can happen in a relatively short time. It's like almost like playing Russian roulette. The bullet's going to go off. It could be sooner than we think, but we just don't know.
So what do you do?
Well, that's why we're here. You know, what should investors do? I think the first thing is, thankfully, you're listening, and you need to be vigilant. You need to keep an eye on the trend in interest rates. Keep an eye on the news for trends in interest rates on the 10-year and the 20-year maturity U.S. government bond. And here's an idea. If you're familiar with looking up stock quotes, then keep an eye on the price of an exchange-traded fund with a symbol of TLT. That's Thomas Larry Thomas. And that if that price goes down, that means yields on the 20-year Treasury is going up. That would be an indication that yields on the Treasury yield curve are going up. So that keep an eye on TLT. If that price starts going down, that's a danger. It's a red flag. And here are some guidelines. If you start to see TLC going down, you should actually, these are some guidelines I'd recommend right now is, number one, we should avoid buying long-term bonds right now. I think that would be something to shy away from.
Long-term bonds, because that's where you have the greater risk for the effect of these interest rates changing.
Correct.
Okay.
Shorter-term bonds and intermediate-term bonds will not fluctuate so much in price if interest rates start going up. The real price fluctuation happens in the longer-term bonds, and I'm talking about the bonds 7 years, 10 years, 12 years of maturity, 15 years, 30 years of maturity.
Okay.
It will fluctuate more in price. And the second thing you can do is to examine each of your bonds or bond mutual funds and make a list of each one that has a duration of more than 5 and get ready to sell these if the bubble bursts.
Okay. Now, Tom, you just had a term. You just said duration, I hear that often. And frankly, I think it's something that's hard to understand because when you hear duration, when you said, watch for the duration if it's more than 5, people think duration is a period of time. How long does something endure? They think duration longer than 5 might be 5 years. But that's not exactly what duration means. Can you try to explain what duration means that we can understand?
Well, there's a reason why it's hard to understand, because it is a mathematical formula involving discount rates and future receipts of income, and it is complicated.
And Tom was a math major, so he likes
it. It's helpful to understand formulas whenever we talk about duration. But the easiest way to understand this is to just think of duration as the change in the value of a bond that will result if interest rates go up by 1%.
Okay, can I just put that in? I'm picturing this in my mind. You said the value of the bond, how much it will change if interest rates go up 1%. Back to my example, I bought a bond for $100,000 at 2% interest. In a few years, the interest rate went up to 5. That was a 3% jump. So what duration is, we want to look to see how much the change in the price of that bond is based on how much the interest rate changed.
Correct. So if a bond or a bond mutual fund has a duration of, let's say, 5, if interest rates go up 1%, that means that the value of your bond or bond mutual fund will go down 5%.
Okay.
Opposite occurs too. Okay. If interest rates go down 1%, well, that's not going to happen, I don't think, because how much further can rates go down?
Right.
So if rates go, again, up by 1, and you have a bond with a duration of 5 or a bond mutual fund with a duration of 5, that means your value will go down 5%. If interest rates go up 3%, as we talked in our previous example, that and you have a duration of 5 on the bond, that means your value will go down 15%.
Okay, that's good. Okay, so
That would be bad.
Oh, no. But no, good that I can kind of grasp what you're telling me. So duration sounds important.
It is very, very important. That's what I'm saying. If you should look at your portfolio of bonds and bond mutual funds And you should find out from whoever your advisor is or by doing research online as to what the duration is. And you should definitely be aware of those bonds and bond mutual funds with a duration of 5, and be aware of the duration of all of your bonds and bond mutual funds, because 5 is not necessarily a magic number. It's just a starting point.
It's like a watermark to start watching.
Correct.
Okay. Are there any bonds that don't act like what you've just described in the show? We got a couple of minutes.
Well, there are some bonds that do not fluctuate like what we've been talking about so far. The simplest one is the bonds that are issued and held in your money market fund. A money market fund is usually part of your investment account. A money market fund is something that is comprised of very, very short-term bonds. By law and by regulation, the bonds held in your money market fund have to be very, very short-term, and those yields have dropped to virtually zero. So unfortunately, your money market fund is not going to deliver very much income if you were to put your money into a money market fund, but your principal will be very, very steady. In fact, you'll be preserving your principal if you were to switch out of a bond fund into a money market fund, because the money market fund is comprised of only very, very short-term bonds that are going to mature over the next 15, 30, 45 days,
okay,
upwards of 90 days. So that is one type of bond mutual fund that would hold its own very well. Another type of a bond mutual fund is that there have been some bonds issued by usually corporations which pay a variable rate of interest tied to some index like LIBOR or the prime rate. And these bonds' interest rate will automatically go up when other interest rates go up. And therefore, their price will not fluctuate as much as owning a fixed rate bond. Not very many of these variable rate bonds out there, and most of the bonds have been issued by companies that have lower credit quality and had to issue these bonds in order to get investors excited about buying the bonds, and therefore they're generally of lower credit quality. Mm-hmm. So you have higher credit risk with these types of variable rate bond funds. And the last thing is TIPS, the Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, have historically had a good hedge against inflation, but I fear that even TIPS are way overpriced now, and that's due to the Federal Reserve Bank's purchases of them, and I think they even have danger of the type that we've been talking about. So there historically have been good solutions for this type of an event, but that may not hold us next time we have the problem that we've been discussing.
Okay. And you had said throughout the show, you want to watch Treasury rates because all of the other bond rates seem to be tied to that. So when we see rates going up, we have to watch to see how it's going to affect the prices of other bonds. Does that mean inflation's going up too, typically?
Not necessarily. You know, the next time we see rates rise, it may have nothing to do with inflation. Historically, interest rates and inflation have been connected. But this next time when rates go up, it may have nothing to do with inflation.
Okay, so people should keep those differentiated.
And that's why TIPS,
different kinds of.
And that's why TIPS may not be a good solution.
Okay. Tom, thanks so much for being here. It was enlightening, and I appreciate your taking the time and doing such a thorough job on explaining this. How do people reach you if they'd like to ask more questions?
Our office telephone number is 610-868-9000, or my email address is triddle@valleynationalgroup.com. That's like in T as in Tom, riddle@valleynationalgroup.com.
Okay, thank you so much for being here. Folks, next week I am going to discuss where we are with taxes, because we have been held up on filing some of our returns. We are going to be able to file a few more by February 15th. The IRS is rolling out different filing dates depending on the different activity that you have on your tax return. So I want to bring you up to date on that as much as I can. And then I also want to take your questions next week on taxes. So write them down. be a busy bee this week getting your taxes in order, and think about some questions that you might have, and I'll be taking calls next week for that as well. I want to thank Jeff for being here. Thank you, Andrea, for being here. And stay tuned for Tom Druckenmiller coming up with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices each and every week. Have a great one. Bye.